This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
The Red Sox blast 5 home runs in Tampa as they knot up their series against the Rays at a game apiece. This after beat the Yankees in the wild card earlier this week. And the Patriots lose to Brady and then say goodbye to Stephon Gilmore. They take on the Texans tomorrow. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Certainly a lot to get to on the Press Pass today. We're going to start with the Red Sox and their win last night in Tampa over the Rays. And let's face it, there was an incredible high that we were experiencing here in New England after the Red Sox beat the Yankees, and that was quickly diminished by the 5-0 loss to the Rays, in which Eduardo Rodriguez got knocked around a little bit. Red Sox had 9 hits, didn't score any runs. And then this game came about, and the Red Sox jump out to a 2-0 lead, but they had the bases loaded with one out and Hunter Renfro hitting a double play. Thought they should have gotten more in the first inning. Chris Sale comes out and gives up a grand slam to Jordan Ludlow, and next thing you know, Sox are down 5-2, but still had a good feeling about the offense, but were they going to be able to shut things down? Well, Alex Cora, as he has done often, made a bold move. He told Chris Sale his night was done after just one inning, which tied for his shortest start of his career. Then Tanner Houck came in and shut things down. He's retired 30 of 31 batters, has Houck, over the last week, and has been flat-out phenomenal for the Red Sox. You look at the 14 runs, and you're like, yeah, it was the Sox offense. It was the 5 home runs. But if they're not able to get that bridge from Houck, 5 innings of one-run ball, struck out 5, only 2 hits, they don't win this game. The bullpen was, again, good after that, as well as Brazier, Robles, and Barnes all combined for 3 shutout innings of work. But the home run was certainly a big part of this for the Red Sox. Bogarts in the 3rd with a big home run. That followed by Verdugo's home run off of Colin McHugh. Kike Hernandez in the 5th, and then J.D. Martinez, after Hernandez had tied it at 5, with the 3-run bomb off of Whistler. Devers would add one later. 5 home runs for the Red Sox. And as has been the case, they were able to turn things around when things did not look like they were going the Red Sox way. They stuck it out, and they end up winning this game 14-6. Here is Alex Cora.
Yeah, it was a 3-0 game. So we've been behind 3-0 plenty of times. So we put a good inning in the first one. I mean, we hit the ball hard yesterday. So we offensively, I think we're getting to where we are. And it was just a 3-0 game in the second inning. That's the way we saw it, obviously. You know, we had to make adjustments, and Tanner came in and did an outstanding job. But offensively, it was like, hey, don't panic. We put 2 in the first, and we still got 8 innings. And they did an amazing job the whole night.
Of course, J.D. Martinez has been dealing with an ankle injury as he sprained his ankle tripping over the second base bag going back out to his right field spot in Washington against the Nationals. He missed the wild card game, wasn't on the roster for the division series, on the roster, but missed game 1, could have pinch hit. In this game, Red Sox lineup didn't come out until a little bit before, an hour before the game, because they weren't sure if J.D. Martinez was going to be in that lineup. He was in that lineup, and he went 4-for-5, 3 RBI, a huge night for J.D. Martinez.
I don't know. I think when I'm in there, I kind of just stretch the lineup out a little bit more. We have a lot of good hitters on this team, and extend the middle of the order just a little bit longer. It makes a big difference.
Right up front.
So Nathan Eovaldi gets the ball for the Boston Red Sox tomorrow as they take on the Rays in a pivotal game 3 at Fenway Park. First pitch will be after 4 o'clock. Eovaldi has been so clutch in these big games, including that 5 1/3 inning performance against the Yankees, which he surrendered only 1 run and out-dueled Gerrit Cole. Here is Nathan Eovaldi on why he's so good in the postseason.
Nate, you've talked before about how much you enjoy these types of moments. Why do you enjoy them so much, and what does it bring out in you specifically?
It's the competitive nature. You know, it's like you want. I at least for me, like I want to be in these situations. I want to compete against the best. You know, I want to compete against the teams that are the hottest at the, you know, at that time. I feel like, especially with pitching, you can really motivate the team and get them going to move on to the next round, things like that. You know, you go out there and you perform well, and or even if you don't, you know what I mean. You don't do well, and the team picks you up. You know, we've been around each other all year. You know what I mean? And there's just that camaraderie, everything that goes on with it, being in the clubhouse, being with these guys for so long. It's fun.
Switch gears to Patriots now. Patriots at 1-3. They take on the Texans this week, and the Brady game seems like it was so long ago with everything that's been going on with the Red Sox, but just a week ago. And the matchup, obviously, leading into it, was all about Belichick and Brady, and what could have been was Brady's time shortened because of their relationship, all that stuff. And then there was the game itself. When the Patriots' defense was pretty good, and they actually gave their team a chance to win, albeit a long shot on that Folk field goal. But the facts are the facts. The Patriots are 1-3, and this offense continues to sputter to a large degree. I talked with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick about what he was thinking after the game and when he was driving home after the game. He met with Brady. They talked for a long time in the visitor's locker room in Foxborough. And I was interested in what Belichick's kind of all his feelings were coming out of that game.
Morning, Bill. How are you?
Good.
When you're driving home last night, are there reflections on, you know, the atmosphere and Tom, or is it just kind of a focus on, you know, the game itself and some of the things that you want to improve upon? What was your mindset on the drive home last night?
I just got to do a better job. We just got to do a better job as a team. Need to figure out how to do that.
And just kind of looking at the offense generally, I know Mike asked about the run game, but just what you're seeing right now in terms of productivity on the offensive side, where do you look at, you know, specifically for where you need to improve?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of areas that we can improve in. We can improve everywhere, and so we'll keep working on all of them. Fundamentals, execution, timing, physicality, you know, coaching. We need to do a better job in a lot of areas, in all three phases of the game.
So Patriots this week also made a big move in cutting Stephon Gilmore initially and then trading him to Carolina. More on that in a second. But first, Matthew Slater. Slater's played with Brady as long as anybody. Both are likely headed to the Hall of Fame. Slater, of course, as a special teams whiz. Here is Slater's thoughts on taking on Brady.
Hey, Matthew. Hope all's well with you.
Hello, Chris.
Wanted to ask you just about what it was like playing against Tom, a guy that you spent so much time with. Was there something unique about it? Was it just kind of a routine type of thing, a game that you play? Well, how would you kind of categorize it?
And now that the game has passed, you know, it was a little strange sitting over there. You've been in those moments in those tough spots, and you know, you've had that guy on your side for a lot of years. It was different, obviously. You know, you see him standing back there in the pocket, and you're like, man, I remember he was standing over with us, standing back in the pocket. But, you know, like I said last week, it's, you know, that's a part of football. Players change teams, coaches change teams, scouts change teams, you know, and so on and so forth. So it was an honor to share the field with Tom again. Obviously, you know, a player of that caliber, when you get a chance to participate in a competition against him or with him, it's an honor for you if you're a competitor. And we have a lot of competitors here. You know, it was obviously on a friendship level, it was great to see him. Glad he's doing well. Wish he hadn't done as well last night. But, yeah, I mean, you know, thankful for that experience, but you know, he's going to be focusing on his group. We're going to be focusing on our group. A lot of football left, and we want to start playing our best football now.
So the Stephon Gilmore move, he was scheduled to come off the physically unable to perform list next week, was shocking. The Patriots announced initially they were cutting him. That allowed for a time period where they could make a deal. They ended up sending him to the Carolina Panthers, but Patriots secondary kind of rocked by this move, as Gilmore is the best cornerback in football. Here is Adrian Phillips on that.
Yeah, it sucks, you know, but that's part of the business. That's my guy. Immediately when I found out, you know, I shot him a text and just let him know, like, you know, I rock with him the long way and that nothing changes except that he's not here every day. And I just appreciate him. I learned so much from him and everything. It sucks because I really wanted to play with him and I like playing with him. And you have a guy that caliber of a player on the field and you just see the kind of stuff that he does. It's like, wow. So unfortunately, you know, it's none of my business, but just things went the way they went and he had to do what was best for him and his family. And, you know, it sucks.
Kind of sticking on that topic with Stefan, obviously you're pretty emotional about you know, him not, you know, being with the team anymore. Is it difficult at times to push aside, you know, the business side of things? And this is a guy obviously you like a lot, and kind of trying to wrap your head around why something like this happens?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, we're human and, you know, you build relationships with people, and especially with him being the DB, those relationships is super tight and you want the best for like all of your teammates anyway. So when a situation like that arises, you kind of wonder like, dang, what's going on? But then you realize, hey, it's above my pay grade. So, you know, you talk about it and like I said earlier, it's not one of those discussions that you want to have, but everybody is affected by it. And, it just, like I said earlier, it just sucks.
Is it easier with, you know, Bill Belichick's pedigree to be like, okay, I trust that there's a reason behind this, even if, like, at face value, it doesn't seem to make sense?
I mean, this is only my second year here, so I don't really know what happened in the past. But, you know, it's just both sides feel like they have to do what's best for them. You know, he's looking after the team, Steph's looking after his family. It just is what it is. I don't know what went on, but, you know, both are making the best decision that they feel is possible. So I guess it is what it is.
Your evaluation of the defense to date, a quarter point of the season, like, where do you feel that the defense is now as compared to the beginning of the season, and where are you want it to be?
Yeah, we're still making strides, you know. We're not where we want to be, but we're still making those strides every week. When we get to the point of we're dictating the outcome of the games and we're going out there and dominating for four quarters, then that's when we know we're where we want to be. But right now, we're just getting better each and every week and we're progressing. Obviously, each week you're going to have some things to fix, but we're nowhere close to where we know we can play and how we can dominate the game.
Do you feel that progression has been slower than you expect? I mean, you looked at this defense, the potential of this defense, and it seemed like this was going to be a team that had the ability to dictate the outcome and win games for this football team. Has it been slower than you expected, or is there just kind of a natural progression that happens a lot of times?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's been slower. There has been situations in the game, like situational football towards the end of the game, where we have to just point blank be better. You know, all defenses talk about, you know, you want the stress on you. You want to be able to put the offense back on the field and give them a chance to win. And three out of those four games, we weren't able to do that. So, I wouldn't say the progression is slower. We just know that we're not there yet.
Patriots defensive back Adrian Phillips right there. Let's go back to Red Sox-Yankees, the wild card game from Tuesday. As Red Sox and Yankees has had so many amazing chapters, and this was the latest. The atmosphere was tremendous at the ballpark, and the Red Sox made very clear very early that this was going to be their night. Nathan Eovaldi coming out and dominating in the first inning. Xander Bogaerts hitting a Garrett Cole changeup to straightaway center field to put the Red Sox up 2-0, and then Schwarber responding with a big hit as well. Let's hear from Xander Bogaerts, who of course has stepped up and had a huge early start to the postseason for the Boston Red Sox, on beating the Yankees and setting the tone early.
Hey, Xander, what was your mindset in that at bat? It looked like you're expecting the changeup. Just kind of what were you thinking in that at bat, and how much do you think that kind of put the Nate at ease, put the team at ease, and set the tone?
I mean, I wasn't particularly looking for a changeup, but I mean, he threw me three off speed pitches. I was kind of looking for an off speed pitch, some more like a slider, but I guess I was on time for the changeup. It stayed pretty middle. I was lucky he didn't throw my fastball because he probably would have blown my hands up. But I was looking for something soft. I mean, he first three pitches were soft, so getting on board, giving us two runs right there was huge. And as I said, just gave Eovaldi a nice breathing room. Bullpen did a nice job. The defense was good. The outfield was great. We played a good game all around.
What are your thoughts, you know, specifically about playing Tampa and the type of challenge that that they present and the type of baseball that you guys have to play? Do you have to raise your level in playing against them?
They're a very clean team, man, to be honest. They score a lot of runs. They might not have the names that some of the other teams have, but they don't make a lot of mistakes, man. If you see it with the pitching staff or especially defensively, they don't give any extra outs. That's a team that plays best. Like tonight, I felt we played solid all the way around. Especially defensively, we've been really good these last couple of weeks. So if that continues, I mean, I feel like that'll make the pitching more at ease.
Also talked with Kyle Schwarber.
Kyle, can you describe kind of the roller coaster of emotions, not just in the game, but kind of leading up to a winner-take-all game like this, and you know, how do you use that to your advantage?
Yeah, you know, obviously leading up to it, where you know you're in the midst of it, and you get you come in, you get swept by the Yankees at our place, and then we're able to go on the road, and you know it was definitely a hard loss last six games. You know, against Baltimore, even Washington, you're going out there and you know the writing's on the wall of what we need to do. You try not to press or anything like that, but it can be, we're human. We're human. We know what we need to do, but. You want to be confident in everything that we're doing on the field, and it wasn't easy, but we were able to come through, and we were able to get the job done, and then to be able to be in the spot today with the winner take all kind of deal, we got to be able to we had to be able to take care of the little things, and we did that great today. We played exceptional defense. Eovaldi pitched his butt off. The bullpen, the guys who came in behind him pitched their tails off, and the offensive side of the baseball, we executed our game plan. And like I said the day before, that if we're going to go out there, win or loss, we want to be able to go out there and feel good about it at the end of the day. We felt like we executed our game plan today, and we walk away with a win, and we're happy about it.
Kyle Schwarber right there is the press pass. I am Chris Ryan. Joe Torre, former Yankees manager and current special assistant to the commissioner, was at Fenway Park for the game on Tuesday. I talked with Torre about the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. Of course, he's been a huge part of that.
You've obviously played a significant part in this rivalry, managing the three times against the Red Sox as Yankees manager. What, in your view, defines this rivalry and what makes it special?
Well, the fans are ferocious on both sides, but it there's a passion that was created a long time ago. I don't know if it started with Bucky Dent or whatever, but I know one thing, that after we'd finished playing a series, not necessarily postseason, either I would call Terry Francona or he would call me and say, boy, am I glad this is over for another 5 weeks or whatever it is. It never was something I looked forward to, but you were always happy you were a part of it, because there was a lot of work.
Yeah, Alex was talking about that the other day, about how draining it is.
It was definitely draining because, first of all, the media, you love to hate them, and they, and you hate to love them, but they're necessary. And just every thing that went on, it was magnified so much, and it you know, it was, but you know, again, when you know what's happening and you know what you're going to have to go through, you know, it's just one of those things. You just go do it, you know.
The 99 series was so different than 03 and 04, which seemed kind of connected, where 99, first time in 21 years, two teams meeting in the postseason after Bucky Dent, Roger coming back here, Pedro that game three, and you guys were obviously the much better team.
Yeah, they both got walloped, right?
Right. You guys were obviously the much better team that year as well. So what stands out about the 99 and the 03 and 04?
Well, 03 and 04, you know, I mean, it was, you know, obviously in 04, you know, with a 3-0 lead, and we had leads in the next two games. It's just one of those things. I never looked back and said, oh, my God, I wish we didn't lose. Because there are so many games that we won, you know, in postseason that I don't even want to think about it again because we were lucky, you know.
Now to the Patriots. They have a must-win game against the Texans this week. Let's face it, Texans are a bad football team. Patriots are 1-3, and they need to turn their season around, mostly on the offensive side of the football. I talked with the Patriots head coach Bill Belichick about that.
Morning, Bill. How are you?
Hey, Chris.
I wanted to ask you a little bit at the quarterway point of the season about your receiving core, particularly you know the four free agent acquisitions. What have you seen from them, and have they impacted the game the way that you would have wanted so far?
Yeah, well, I'm glad we have all of them. I think they've all contributed, done a good job, certainly give us some, you know, depth and quality at that position, you know, along with Jacoby. You know, it's good to get Nikhil back. And, you know, so that's, you know, those have all been, you know, positives. But, you know, I think that Hunter and Janu and KB and Nelly have all helped us. And, you know, they do different things, but they complement each other. And I think the more time we spend together and more time they work with, you know, Mac, who's, you know, another new part of this, you know, that'll continue to move in a positive direction as it has so far.
And generally speaking, each player is different, right? But is there a time period where you feel it takes for players to get acclimated with what you want them to do, particularly on the offensive side of the football?
Yeah, well, there's always a big benefit to, you know, experience in general, but more importantly, experience in a system and experience working with, you know, those players that you mentioned, whether it's the receivers and tight ends or whether it's the quarterback and the, you know, the timing of routes and so forth. But there's different distributions and you know, meshes and releases and things like that, that, you know, the receivers themselves are involved in. And then there's the timing with the quarterbacks and then there's the, you know, overall offensive system. So, you know, I think that's continued to get better every week. You know, we had a couple weeks in the preseason where we didn't have everybody available. And you know, we had, you know, we're working Cam and Mac both at quarterback. But, you know, as things have stabilized here in the last few weeks, I think that's definitely trending in the right direction. And the productions generally followed that. And we still, you know, have a long way to go, but I think that's moving in the right direction. But again, offensively, it takes all 11 guys. It's not just about a quarterback and a receiver. And so, you know, just overall offensively, our production execution, you know, can move to a higher level as well. So that includes everybody.
Thanks.
Here's Hunter Henry.
Just your thoughts on the impact of you know, the game this week and the significance of this for, you know, a group that obviously needs a win. What's the focus?
Focus is, you know, going down to Houston and getting a win. I mean, that's the biggest thing. We got to play a complete game. You know, we're going against a really good team, especially going, you know, they're hungry for a win too. So, you know, we know that kind of going in, and we got to play a complete game, man. We've been close, but close isn't good enough. So we need to finish a game and kind of continue to kind of spark something for ourselves. So, you know, I think we're all fired up and, you know, ready to go down there and get a win.
Has the offensive cohesion taken longer than expected? Like, obviously you're injured during training camp and there's that aspect of things, but obviously there's so much excitement about the free agents coming in and what you guys are going to be able to do. Has it taken longer to get things put together than you expected, or is this just kind of the natural course of so much new personnel within the offense?
I think it's just a natural course, and we're trying to continue to improve. I mean, there's been a lot of moving parts too. I mean, just even up front, I mean, we're, you know, continuing to try to communicate with new guys, you know, and we're all new to it too. So it's just been a steady course of, you know, continuing to grow in the offense. Feel like we all grasp it in a good way. We just got to go out there and execute at a high level, and put more points on the board. That's kind of one of the biggest things we definitely need to do. But I think that's coming, and we're going to continue to get better, and, you know, that we have a big opportunity to do that on Sunday.
Thanks, Hunter.
Yeah, man.
Here's the press pass. I'm Chris Ryan. This is the press pass. I am Chris Ryan. Red Sox and Rays tied the game apiece after the Red Sox went deep five times, scored 14 against the vaunted Rays pitching staff, and particularly knocked around their bullpen. A big night for the Boston Red Sox. Tanner Houck, five innings of one-run ball. Houck has retired 30 of the last 31 batters he has faced, and I've long identified him as being kind of the secret weapon for the Red Sox in this postseason. We're going to hear from Tanner Houck and another rookie who is a secret weapon for the Sox, perhaps not so secret anymore, Garrett Whitlock as well, that duo, in just a moment. But first, let's look back at the wild card game as the Red Sox beat the Yankees 6-2 at Fenway Park. It was such a triumphant evening for the Red Sox. And I talked with Red Sox manager Alex Cora about, you know, the difficulty of managing that game and kind of what things have been like for him down the stretch, and seeing everything come together, making the right calls in the bullpen, making the right calls in the lineup, seeing some clean baseball being played by the Red Sox.
Alex, how would you describe how kind of special tonight was from an atmosphere type perspective, but also the up and down the lineup contributions and some of the bullpen guys that obviously people would not have expected to play a big role in the game that they did tonight?
Yeah, I mean, Plow did an amazing job. He actually, you know, that ball, he drove to right field. Bobby put a great at-bat in the first one, the 3-2 count, slider, borderline right. But we, for us to pull this off, you know, to, for us to win in October, it has to be that way. Everybody has to contribute. I think, you know, pitching-wise, obviously, like I said, it's a different game, and you kind of, like, map it out. That's the way it is, you know, because – it doesn't matter if you're up or down. You map it out to go with the guys that are fresh and you feel they're the best matchups for the opposition. You can be up 3-0 or down 3-0. You still have to do it. That's what Aaron did, right? Holmes comes in early, and he did an amazing job, and he keep bringing his guys because you feel like, okay, we're one or two swings away from coming back. It's very uncomfortable. I thought 162 the other day was the most uncomfortable game to manage in my career. That tops it. That's something different. That's something.
You could definitely see a difference in the Red Sox approach in the postseason. And I want to play this interview right now of Tim Hires, Red Sox hitting coach, about that.
Is there anything substantive that changes in terms of approach from regular season to postseason?
I think guys are a lot more in tune. You know, when you come to the playoffs, I think it's a lot more focused. They know each at bat how important it is, and I think they know that, you know, you get a run on first base and we got to rally, and it's really, really important. So I think the focus, the detail is a lot more, you know, pinpoint in each, you know, in each game, you know, in the playoffs compared to the season, where certain things can happen. But I think playoffs, we know their strengths and weaknesses on the other side, and we have a big history with them. So I think guys are looking for any edge they can, and they're focused on those little details.
Do you know, talk to guys about staying within themselves and, you know, kind of doing what needs to be done in the situation, whether it's hitting the ball to the opposite side of the field, shortening, swinging? Is that a part of postseason approach?
Yeah, it's first of all, it's have fun. You deserve to be here, and we've earned this spot. Second is, you know, not trying to do too much and be the hero. It's team baseball. It's one player at a time. And, you know, as Alex says all the time, it's, you know, it's next man up. So do your part, and that's win 90 feet, and then move on to let the next guy, your teammate, you know, have his shot, and let's keep moving forward.
That's something that Schwarber talked about as well. And does that build throughout the course of the regular season and translate into the postseason, the kind of trust in one teammate to the other? Or does there need to be things seen in whether it's a one-game format like this one or over the course of the series that re-establishes that trust?
I think it's the importance of no pitcher wants to throw a pitch with people on base. And I think winning that 90 feet, getting somebody on base, is really important in the postseason because you know how critical those at-bats are. And then one swing of the bat and it's multiple runs. So I think that's the biggest thing when you talk team baseball, is one man on base, move the line, and gain momentum that way. And, you know, it's not one guy up there trying to hit a three-run jack with nobody on base. I mean, that's what, you know, hitters do. That's what we call trying to do too much. Do your part. When he makes a mistake, put a good swing on it, but stay within the game plan and then rely on your teammate to do the same.
Of course, there is a storied history between the Red Sox and the Yankees, and there's perhaps no figure whose name is more synonymous with that than one Bucky Dent, who was at Fenway the other night.
43 years ago, you had one of the biggest moments of baseball history in this park. What kind of crossed your mind when you walk in here and think about that day and that significance in the history of the game?
Oh, so many memories. You know, when I walk in here, every time I walk in here, I look at the wall. It's the first place I look to see the wall. And it's the first place I look when the first time I ever came in here. But that was just a great game, one of the classics of all time, and one of the most pressure-packed games I ever played in.
How would you define the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry in the 70s? It was Hall of Famers, it seemed like, personalities, some real hatred.
Oh, yeah. They did not like each other, and that was well known, you know, that those two teams went at it, and they played hard, and they slid hard, and they played the game hard, and they didn't like each other. And but there was a professional feeling around it, you know. I mean, even though they didn't like each other, we respected them and they respected us.
Why do you feel that, you know, baseball history, despite all the Hall of Famers and great players, there's so many Bucky Dents in the course of each postseason? You think back to the Red Sox in 18, and it was Steve Pierce who carried them in the World Series MVP. It seems like a lot of times it's the player that's able to maximize who they are in those moments that is not necessarily the name ID.
Well, I think sometimes you overlook those guys, you know, and those are the guys that will beat you. And anytime you got a bat in your hand, you're playing in a big league game, you got a chance to beat somebody and win a ball game. And I think sometimes those guys are overlooked when you're looking at the big guys.
Final thing is, there's been that 78 game has been talked about for 43 years, and I'm sure you hear every single day about your moment. What are some of the more underrated aspects of that game, in your view, that led to the Yankee success?
Well, I think some of the things that get overlooked is Pinellas plays in right field. I mean, he made two great plays, and the one in the seventh inning from stop Burleson from going to third base was probably the biggest play of the game because Jim Rice hit a long fly ball that would have tied the game up, you know. And so I think his play in right field, fighting the sun on the crystal clear day, sometimes that gets overlooked.
And also, how underrated was that Red Sox team as well, where you obviously move on, and it's the 77-78 Yankees back-to-back champions, but the Red Sox of the mid to late 70s didn't get a championship, but that team, again, was pretty solid.
They're as good as anybody in baseball. You know, it just came down to a one-game playoff, and in 77, you know, we won the division, but there was a lot of good teams back then. I thought the Kansas City Royals were as good as anybody. I thought the Dodgers were as good as anybody, but we were better.
Thanks, Bucky.
Okay.
All right, let's hear from Tanner Houck as well as Garrett Whitlock as I sat down with both of them earlier this week.
Everything's the same, but it's obviously also different. So how do you manage it from a mental perspective where you're able to kind of block things out or utilize the emotions of the moment to get, you know, the best out of yourself, Garrett?
I mean, you just got to treat every moment like it's a 0-0 ball game. You got to go out there and, you know, you mentally you just got to prepare like it's another ball game and try and get outs.
Tanner?
Pretty much same thing. It's not making the moment bigger than what it really is. It's still 60 feet 6 inches, still the game that we've been doing the whole year and our entire lives. So, I mean, if you try and make it bigger than what it really is in the moment, then, you know, obviously you'll have a little bit more nerves. But if you kind of just slow the game down, just take a deep breath and realize, all right, same thing I've done all year. I just got to go out there and pitch my game plan and follow that. Then there's nothing else that you can really say other than you left it out there all on the line.
Have you guys been able to take a step back and think about the type of extraordinary season this has been, that it's been your debut in the big league, starting with your reduced attendance, the COVID situation as it began, the COVID situation as an outbreak with this team, and the ups and downs of the ball club? How would you kind of categorize the experience, Tanner?
It's truly an experience that I'll never forget personally. You know, the first few years of me being in the show, it's all been COVID related, and I hear stories about guys, you know, and what it was like before all this stuff. And you know, I'm excited for it to get back to those days. But I mean, the past few years, like, I wouldn't trade them for any other experience. It's been an absolute honor to be here with this team, with this group of guys, and continuing to push forward in the next few years with them as well. I'm incredibly excited for it.
Garrett?
I mean, I don't think there's really any words that can describe it, just because, you know, it's every kid's childhood dream to play professional baseball, and, you know, to get the opportunity and everything. It's something that you don't take any day for granted, and, you know, you just enjoy every second of it.
How do you spend the night before a game like this? I mean, do you visualize at bats? Like, what am I going to do with Stanton? What am I going to do with Judge? Do you go through that process, or is it just, let me get away from baseball when the opportunity, you know, comes to prepare? I'll do that the next day.
For me, I definitely take the latter option. I try and step away from the game. Just enjoy the moment with my fiance, and just spending the time with her, and just living these experiences that, I mean, we're truly blessed to be a part of. But for me, I definitely am going to go home tonight and just continue on my normal routine. And like I said before, like, not making this any bigger than what it is. And if I, you know, go home and I change up my whole routine, I may not come back, you know, with the same kind of stuff. If I just go home tonight and I treat it just like it's game 73, or if it's a wild card game, you know, if I just simplify everything, then I'll be ready for tomorrow and truly come in best prepared that way. If I sit there and I just think about it all night long, I think it'll eat me alive a little bit too much.
And Garrett, what are the moments that you'll, when you think back about this year, that'll stand out to you the most, and your kind of your welcome to the show type of moments?
I mean, the debut is obviously a huge moment. First hit in Atlanta was a lot of fun. First win in Yankee Stadium was pretty sweet. I would just say
getting
those
to meet
moments.
Me.
I mean, spending every day with Tanner Houck.
Totally. And finally for you, Tanner, I mean, the five perfect innings to conclude your regular season in Washington. That has to be, I mean, you've had some moments this year, but that has to kind of top them all and really give you good confidence going to the postseason.
Yeah, I mean.
And getting no Garrett Whitlock.
Yeah, I mean, obviously getting to know Whitlock is A++. Like, you can't beat that. But, yeah, I mean, to end off the regular season in that way, it boosts the confidence even more going into the postseason, right whenever we need it most. I know that the rest of the team confidence is up high, and I know that they're going to be going out there and playing with all the heart in the world for it. But for me to end off a personal note like that, it's been unbelievable. This year has been something else, that's for absolutely sure, and I'll never forget it for the rest of my life, really. It's been truly a blessing and an honor to have the fans here and have this amazing team here, you know, pushing us the entire time. It's a complete honor.
Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. More Sox, more Patriots still to come. Again, I am Chris Ryan. This is the Press Pass. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Patriots and Texans this weekend. Patriots defense has been good, but has it been good enough? I talked with Dante Hightower, Patriots middle linebacker, about that.
Hey, Dante, do you feel like, you know, this defense is playing, you know, winning football at this point in time, where you kind of have that foundation, but it's going to just building upon it?
Could you ask that first part again? I'm sorry.
do you feel like you guys are playing, winning football right now, where you're the defense is in a spot where you're giving your team a chance to win?
The job of a defense is to keep to not let the opposing team score. So, anytime that, we can come in, we play a really good team, a really good offense like we played, and, slow those guys down and limit a lot of the big shots and big plays that offenses like they come accustomed to. We feel like we're kind of, doing our job, but, anytime you can stop the big plays and, if they get down in the red zone and you can play good in the red area and make guys kick field goals, that's part of winning football.
And Matthew Judon's been a player who's been so fun to watch so far. How would you describe him as a player and what he's brought to the defense and also as a person?
Just a great dude. Love him. Ever since he's got here, he's always one inclined to work hard and one who's kind of really led by example as far as, whether it be, wanting to do extra workouts or wanting to do extra drills or something after practice. And it goes to show that, a lot of guys see that and pick up on it and feed off of it. And more or less off the field, but on the field too, especially, whenever you need a good rush and a good spark on defense or a momentum swing, Judy has been showing up for us. And, I'm glad that I can call him a teammate.
Heard part of our conversation with Hall of Fame Yankees manager Joe Torre. Won 4 World Series with the Yankees, 96 and then 98 through 2000. Also managed the Yankees in those two classic 2003-2004 series against the Red Sox. Here is the rest of my conversation with Joe Torre.
I'll tell you what happened in 03 and in 04. 03, when Booney hit the home run, what caught my eye, the ball's out of the ballpark, but what caught my eye was Tim Wakefield walking off. He had such a tremendous year against us that year, and then we beat him. That after we lost in 04, I picked up the phone and called him to congratulate him because he's a special competitor, But, 03 was... the chances of us coming back against Pedro in a game like that were almost nil, and we were able to chop away and get there. And then, of course, it was equally, unbelievable for the following year. But as I say, that anything can happen in these rivalries, especially in this ballpark.
Right.
Of course, Don Zimmer was sitting next to me a lot of it, and he kept telling you never have enough runs. There's no such thing as a 4 or 5 run lead and you're safe because of this ballpark.
And just kind of summarizing, personalities, you mentioned a lot of them, and also the unpredictability where you never quite know what was going to happen. Like the 03, you guys probably shouldn't have won that game against Pedro, and 04, you're up 3-0, and you can't look back at it, I assume, because your team had such structure with the bullpen, and you had Mariano Rivera, and yeah, they got some hits.
Hey, they beat us. We didn't lose. They beat us, and it's something you have to respect. You can't run the clock out in this game. You got to get 27 outs. You got to fight like hell to get the last 3, especially. And, we weren't able to do it. We had Mariano out there in game 4, and, you figured, you had the best chance, and it didn't work out. And then, of course, game 5, we had a 2-run lead, and Trot Nixon makes a great play in right center field with the bases loaded. They earned it. They certainly did. And then, of course, by the time we got to game 7, we just didn't pitch well right from the get-go.
Last thing is, I was reading Goose Gossage's book, and he was marveling, having played through the Steinbrenner era with Billy Martin and everybody else, how you were able to create a environment in which you could do your job and that there wasn't the constant, maybe there was constant intervention, but how are you able to manage that personality? Was that the most challenging person you've had to, quote-unquote, manage?
Well, I you know, you knew George's the history, you know, and again, he was passionate too. He wanted to win. I thought one thing when I came to the Yankees that was important is the players had to know that I made, you know, the lineup decisions. I made all those decisions. I thought that was important for them to understand. And George really never got in the way of that. I mean, I didn't hear from George. And actually, I called George more than he called me, to be honest with you. So, you know, he... And I think maybe because we won the first year, you know, maybe he gave me a little more rope. I don't know. But, you know, we had a good run, and I really didn't, you know, not it wasn't as maddening as you may imagine.
This is the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan.